Alrighty, welcome everyone to our summer meeting. First thing we have on the agenda is our roll call and approval of minutes. It looks like I'll just go down my list real quick. I'm here, Tim is here, Alan, I saw him, Simone is not here yet, we're hoping she checks in later, I saw Rich, Jason said he would not be here, Derek hopefully will check in, and then we have Joe. So that's the roll call, and then approval of last month or last quarter's meeting minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes?
I'll move. Rich.
Okay, Rich makes the motion. Anyone second?
Seconded.
Okay, Joe's going to second. Meetings for last, or minutes for last month's meeting approved. I was going to say, Amber, thanks a lot. Those minutes were very detailed this month. I was reminded of some conversations I had forgotten about already, sadly, in 3 months. So thank you for the great meeting minutes. Next, we'll move on to updates. Turn it back over to Travis, I'm thinking.
Yeah, let me pull up the agenda real quick. I accidentally closed it, so... Well, all right, I'll go through Clark County updates. As I mentioned, the enforcement staff folks won't be here tonight. So the updates were provided to you via email. And so if you have any questions, you can respond. You can let Amber, you can mention them now today, or you can send any enforcement questions or comments to Amber and I, and we will pass those along to Melissa and Brian Schlottman, so that they can respond to you in there in the know. General solid waste programs, a lot of what we've got going on we will talk about later, but I was talking a little bit about some recruitment stuff. As you know, Kim vacated the position and has moved on to other career things. We interviewed, we had one recruitment process, went through and didn't quite find a candidate that was what we were looking for, so we have hunkered back down, closed that recruitment, revisited the position, and I'm putting together a little bit more of a robust marketing plan for that position. There's some broader reaching outlets we can get to, so we'll be doing that. Probably be releasing that position next week and have a month-long recruitment opening window, and hopefully we'll get some really strong candidates in there and have somebody back helping out Amber with some of the SWAC stuff and taking on some of the work Mike and I have been doing. I would just want to commend Mike and Amber, in addition to all of our team, but specifically Mike and Amber with the loss of Kim, as well as Jessica's project position ending. They've all been doing the work of several people with minimal profanity, but some. But I just wanted to commend the work that this team has done, as well as our partners at the city have really stepped up to help us get some of this work moved forward. So that we can present and talk to you about all the things we're going to talk about tonight. So the other staffing updates, we were able to successfully recruit for Jessica's vacated project position. So she was working on special waste. I'm excited to announce that Jessica successfully and applied for and interviewed for the position, and she will be returning back to us on Monday, working in the same capacity. So she will be in a part-time 30-hour-a-week role working on special waste and picking up where she left off with the special waste reports, non-curbside material reports, and implementing some of those recommendations. So you'll be seeing more of her in the future. Also on the outreach and education side, we've got a Green Schools Program Coordinator position that is currently vacant. That was approved for us to recruit, as well as a vacant tech position that we're trying to figure out what the team needs to support now that we're kind of in this new world. So we'll be recruiting for the Green Schools position as well as the program tech position probably here shortly. So we'll be sending that out to SWAC just to, you know, if you know anybody that would be really great candidates, or if you have outlets to share it across resources, that would be wonderful. So just looking for all the help we can get on recruiting and making sure this team is back built up so that we can keep moving forward on all the work that we've got coming up. So I think that's it for just high level updates for Clark County. We will be touching on all the other big updates here later on. Is there anything anybody's been specifically wanting to know about? I want to make sure I didn't gloss over anything. All right, so not seeing anybody clamoring for the unmute button. Oh, hey, Derek, welcome. You snuck in. It's very sneaky. Yeah, those are the updates for us. So turn it back over to you, Kyle. Oh, Amber. Amber's.
We had a couple other things that might need to mention. For those of us just joining, we are hoping after going through the agenda items, if time allows, it would be nice to be able to talk about the future of SWAC meetings in person, digital versus hybrid or whatever, and what that's going to look like for everybody. Travis, there was one other thing. Do we want to go into that at the moment?
Yes, I was actually looking for the email so I could read it, and I just found it, so I'm glad. So I don't know if this is appropriate, if this is relevant to everybody, but there is an email listserv that goes out to a lot of people that are interested in what happens with the Solid Waste Advisory Commission. And Amber got a response earlier this week that I wanted to read to the group. I don't know who here ever worked with Don Ebison. He was on the SWAC for 12 years from 2004 to 2016. So he was here before I worked here. But his wife reached out and let us know that Don passed away in October of last year, so October of 2020, from lung cancer. And she wrote a response to us that I just wanted to share with the group in case anybody here had ever gotten a chance to work with him, but also just to share and highlight a former SWAC member that had been with us. So his wife wrote, "Don always believed in giving back to the community. He spent 2 years on the Seattle City Council before he and his wife moved to Clark County in 1999. By the time he had joined SWAC, he had spent 25 to 30 years in the solid waste field, selling equipment for various peoples over the years. During his 12 years on SWAC from 2004 to 2016, he acted as representative for both Southwest Clark County and the solid waste industry and filled the roles of both vice chair and chair. In 2016, he retired from his job and from SWAC, moved down to Arizona with his wife, Joan, where in October of 2020, he passed away in their home in Tucson. In a brief email on Wednesday morning, Joan said, his wife, "Don was about quality of life, not quantity. He enjoyed working with the people affiliated with SWAC." So just wanted to share that for those of you that it's always good to talk about those and share the lives of those that have passed, but also those of you that were familiar to him, just wanted to share that. So I don't know if anybody wants to say, or if anybody remembers him, wants to say anything before we move on, but that was an update that I, thank you, Amber, for reminding me. I wanted to make sure that I shared it.
Well, I'll just jump in. Don was the chair for a number of years, did a great job. He was a real advocate for closing the old, Portside Lagoon and Landfill, which got closed. So mission accomplished on that one. Don was a great guy to work with.
Thank you, Rich. All right. Well, thank you for giving us a little bit extra time, Kyle, to share that information with the group. And with that, yes. I will turn it back over to you, Kyle.
Thank you. Yeah. Members. So moving on, it looks like next up we have updates from City of Vancouver, and I'm assuming Julie, you're going to be heading that up again.
Yes, good evening. Happy summer, everybody. We're almost to the end of it, but I hope you have had a great summer so far. Just a few updates and highlights that we've kept you updated on in the previous Slack agenda. So we've had a bulky curbside pickup service in lieu of neighborhood cleanup events. That's going quite well. Just some stats for you. Normally, with that annual service to our neighborhoods and our residents, we collect around over 500 tons of bulky items. When we have it event style within the neighborhoods, we tend to generate more. But right now we're writing at about 60 tons of material picked up. It's not yet, it's more than halfway. We'll wrap up in about October, late October. Disposal costs for us have been around $6,000. But we're excited to see residents taking advantage of that service because it does better serve them in some ways than the events normally would. We also offer a spring coupon for yard debris and tire disposal. Typically that is April through June, and we extended it one more month for COVID restrictions and allowing people more time to get to the yard debris disposal options. And so far, we still have another month's worth of data we're waiting to come in. But we spent about $6,000 in disposal costs for our residents and diverted over 5,300 yards of yard debris and about 600 tires that were safely and responsibly managed through this program. And as you might recall, we have a regional fall leaves coupon program that Clark County and City of Vancouver partner on. So believe it or not, we're already planning for the fall and planning for the coupon to go out in late September, early October. And we anticipate that fall coupon to be the same quantity and availability to residents at all yard debris drop-off sites as prior years. In addition, an exciting project to kind of keep Select members aware of in Vancouver. As we see implementation of bike mobility projects and different uses of our streets in our city, we see a lot of density and growth on our west side, and we're looking at transportation planning that is changing the use of streets, and that also has an impact for solid waste and collection. So for the past couple of years, they've been planning and doing outreach on a strategy to change the use and the way Columbia Street is used from the waterfront all the way north to about 45th Street. Quite encompassing and is very detailed and complex. But what it will result in is improvements for multi-users on the streets, both cyclists, pedestrians on the side of the street, and greater protection for users of the road. But that also means a little bit of a layer of complexity for solid waste. So we've been excited to learn and adapt and worked really closely with Waste Connections and the drivers on those routes to alter a little bit of the way they provide service, such as moving the cart a couple of feet out of the bike lane so that cyclists can have a clear, dedicated path. So it's very fun and interesting to look at how collection has to be adaptive and is a rolling utility rather than a fixed utility. So if you want to see that project, it's still underway. We hope to wrap it up in the fall and have little markers of where carts will go, both as a visual indicator to the people on the street that use the street that, yes, collections still have to take place in the street. And maybe I'll share a picture the next time we meet. But you can check out Columbia Street. It's paved and it's beautiful and it's smooth. So enjoy that. In addition, we also, I'm not sure if many Slack members knew of a Senate Bill 5040. The Welcome to Washington Litter Cleanup Act, SB 5040, allowed local jurisdictions to apply for grant funding from the State Department of Ecology to clean up WashDOT on and off ramps within their jurisdiction. So we applied for that funding and were awarded $40,000 over the course of 2 years. So the planning and scheduling is underway with an ambitious timeline of hopefully starting this fall to pick up litter on the on and off ramps on WashDOT property. And we're doing this in partnership with Clark County. The Clark County Corrections crews are a key partner to this, as well as our operations, WashDOT, and Ecology. So we're excited to be able to share some of that schedule and timelines as we unfold this work. $40,000 is stretched quite thin when you actually think about 2 years. So we're leveraging Clark County Corrections grant dollars that they receive from State Department of Ecology to couple that to have a greater impact. And working also with Ecology Youth Corps. So we're excited for that partnership and the collaboration that will hopefully give a positive outcome of this grant. And then prior Slack conversations have been interested in our climate strategies and the work that Council is doing to progress greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And staff gave Council a workshop and update at the end of last month, where our council expressed input and interest in pursuing some bold actions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and target net zero emissions on an aggressive timeline. So that information will be used to further develop strategies and refinements and what we hope to be a climate action plan that will be brought before our council for consideration and approval at some time in 2022. And then the last thing just to make you aware of is, and I don't want to steal the thunder from Derek, who might want to give this update. An emerging opportunity for residents, particularly in Vancouver, is subscription specialty item recycling on their doorstep. We've learned of two different market players, Bridwell and Recycle Plus, that are offering this almost like a niche recycling service, where customers can subscribe. And that does fall outside of our regulatory requirements and our authority, if you will, and out of the scope of the traditional materials that we manage through our program. But that has become available since our last meeting to some of our Vancouver residents who opt in for that service. So with that, I'll kick it back to Kyle, or if you have questions, happy to answer.
All right. Thank you, Julie. Appreciate all your updates. And yeah, those new subscription services are kind of interesting. I was actually looking at one of them. So man roll myself. Looks like next up with Waste Connections, Eric. Good to see you.
Hi. Yes. Good to see you guys. I have some kids outside playing giant Jenga, so hopefully it won't be too loud in the background. But, So, real quick, we got, collection updates. You know, we're working through labor shortages that you're hearing about in many other industries. You know, we're short, drivers, customer service reps, pretty much any kind of position you want. We're working through that. Luckily, it hasn't caused us any issues with, maintaining service levels, but, we're, cautious about, rebounding COVID right now and how that'll kind of all play together now with the labor shortages on top of it. So, we do have, 3 employees out across our 350 employees, that are COVID related cases right now. So we're starting to see a bit of an upswing in that. And we have pretty stringent protocols in place that keep everybody safe along those routes. our office, our main customer service office is still partially open. We're planning on opening to the public, September 1st, but we've recently decided to, I haven't told, the city or county this, but, we're probably going to be pushing that back just again with this most recent uptick in COVID cases, just for the safety of our staff and interacting with the public. We're probably going to have to push that back another month or two. We don't know exactly. We're moving forward right now. We purchased trucks to automate our garbage service in Battleground, Le Centre, and Yakult next year within the city limits. So those three areas, it's about, I think it's about 20,000 customers or so that we're looking at automating. They'll go away from the current can service and go to a roll cart. That'll be a nice change for us that allow customers get a nice additional asset. The price will be fairly nominal to them, and it'll allow us to address some of these labor shortages as well and automate some of that service. And then our plan is to also automate the rural portion of Clark County next year. So any cans that are out in rural sections would move to carts. We would keep all the containers that are out there. We'll keep using the same truck. They'll just have a tipper on the back so we can pick up carts. And then the urban growth areas of the county, which is the bigger portion, actually would move to carts in 2023. And it was just, you know, we have 75 to 80,000 homes out in that area, and it's hard to automate all that all at once. So we wanted to kind of cherry pick certain pieces and do it over a 2-year period. But we're excited to kind of get that done. It's kind of a unicorn for us to actually do it. But I think it's going to be a nice addition to the system. And then another thing on the collection side, Julie mentioned that, we call it Recycle Plus. It is a, additional service that customers can pay $10 a month, and we will recycle, hard to recycle items like plastic film, styrofoam, batteries, light bulbs. We'll take small amounts of clothing as well, and we're looking at other types of services that we can add into that. And it's a bin system that you put on your doorstep, and we're going to start delivering those. I'm actually delivering a bunch tomorrow myself, along with Kevin Miracle, who's our assistant district manager. And we have one other staff person that's going to help us. So we have about 100 customers that want to do it right now, and we have another 100 to 200 customers that have expressed interest. So we think it's probably going to ramp up pretty quickly to, I don't know, somewhere over 1,000 customers by the end of the year. So we're excited for that service. Education front, I didn't catch it, Travis really mentioned it, but we're starting to work on the fall newsletter. I think a draft is out for that. That's a big project for our team. And they're getting ready for schools to go back in session. They're very excited about it, having taken the year off, essentially. But our education team really loves to get back in schools and spend time with the kids. So that's a big piece for them. Transfer station side, record volumes again last month. Everybody wants to go to the transfer station in July. So we had 14,000 tons of garbage come in from non-route material. That's the first time we ever crossed the 14,000 ton threshold for a month. So Clark County is screaming along with lots of garbage. We also are doing some pretty heavy construction right now at Central Transfer. If anybody's been by there, Mike and I have talked about it over the last couple of months about some of the capital plans we're doing. We had purchased a small piece of land for a turnout lane, a deceleration lane, 2 years ago, and we're finally into construction phase on that. And that should be done by the middle of the month, middle to late August. We ran into some delays with a pipe underneath the property, and that'll be complete, and that'll allow to alleviate some of the traffic issues that we have up there. It's not gonna solve the problem entirely, but it'll give people a turnout lane and get them off of 503, which is, you know, we have some serious safety concerns there. And so it'll be good to get that in place. We still are trying to address the issue of queuing traffic. So we've applied for a permit to try and allow us to do some more flexibility on queuing traffic in and out of the property. And Mike will get into some more of that on his presentation tonight, but we've got some ideas on how to help that. But it's kind of rough entering next thing in the facility for the next couple of weeks. And then paint care. We've probably talked about a bunch over the year, but that is a producer responsibility program where we all pay $1 a gallon when we go to the paint store, and then the paint industry takes care of disposal of the paint. Previously, our HHW program in Clark County would take care of those costs. Now it's being handled by paint care. It doesn't really change the service that customers receive. It just allows for a shifting of the cost structure. And then hopefully it'll allow for a little bit more expansion of the paint recycling program as well, where, you know, maybe stores become a little bit more heavily involved than they are right now. So we're hoping that that gets expanded out. But that it will go into effect. This week, we're actually transitioning service over to paint care. And last thing is recycle markets. Just to give you guys an update on that. Continues to be escalating prices for recycle markets. A real nice stability after the couple of years of downward trends. That China soared impact of 2018, you know, really forced the United States to reinvest in the mills that are in place here, particularly in the Northwest. And then that mill capacity has in turn, you know, increased demand for recycled materials. So we're seeing pretty good pricing on cardboard, paper, and plastics are another thing that are really, really taking off right now. So that's been nice to see. I think that's about it. Any questions?
Hey, Derek, when you were talking about automated systems, so that's just the people with the roll carts and the arm that picks it up. That's so it's not, I didn't realize most of the county doesn't have that service. It sounds like.
Yeah, all the cities, basically, City of Vancouver, Camas, Washougal, and Ridgefield all have it. We automated Ridgefield last year, in our new contract there. And then, it's just part of the UTC program. It's just kind of the oddity of that service type up there, where, you know, we just haven't been able to get, it's like a $5 million investment to automate at least. I think it might be even more than that. And it's in the UTC model. It's hard as a business to get a rate of return on that program. So, but we're excited to finally roll it out. It's been a long time coming.
Thanks.
So, Derek, I had a question about the paint care. So, you guys will still be collecting paint at the first on the days you have going to remain the same.
You kind of froze up there, Kyle, on the end of your question.
Sorry, I was just asking about the paint care and whether with the you guys will still be collecting paint on site at the transfer stations.
Yeah.
Are the days of collection expanding at all, or is that remaining the same? Because I think, if I remember right, it's only like on weekends or like.
Right. Yeah. Central Transfer accepts Friday through Sunday. West Van accepts Fridays and Saturdays. And then Washougal is every other Saturday. And we will continue to accept all household hazardous waste in those periods, including paint. So the customer won't notice any difference. In contract negotiations for an extension, one of the things that we're discussing is expanding HHW services, in part to try and spread out traffic a little bit, but also there's just an increased demand for that, obviously. At some point, I would hope we get to a situation where we're doing 5, 6, 7 days a week. Most of the transportations. West Van doesn't get a lot of traffic. You know, Washougal could probably use like an every Saturday program. And CTR probably could use 7 days a week. I mean, it seems like people, will want to use it, regardless. And then the paint care program itself, for us, it's just paperwork. You know, there's a different person paying the bill instead of us. But I think paint care will also, do a good job of marketing the program and hopefully get more paint stores involved, which would be nice to see more outlets throughout the county so people can drop paint off at any place they want.
All right. Thank you very much. And excited to see those automated trucks come out. I've been wondering about that every time. It's like, man, I still can't believe they haven't done that, but I know it's a lot of money to you guys to do that. So.
And I forgot to mention, but we also have our electric truck coming. That's the other unicorn that may not exist. And it's now rumored to be coming in October, excuse me. It was supposed to be in January. Now it's coming in October. They've been working the kinks out repeatedly on it, and it's hopefully going to be here soon.
October of 2021?
That's a good question.
I also heard it's just a Tesla with an automatic arm on the top.
Yep.
Throw the garbage into that moon sunroof thing.
Yeah. It's got the auto park feature. It's fantastic.
Gotta have a nice ride.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, well, we'll move on to our next agenda item, and we got Pete with the solid waste management plan kind of update and where we're going to be headed with that. So I'll turn it over to Pete now. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Kyle. Amber's going to help me run our slides, but thank you, esteemed SWAC members, for taking your precious time and volunteering. I do really appreciate all of you, and we'll get rolling on our slide deck here. This is just a very quick 5-10 minute overview as we just kind of get out the gate with our solid waste management plan. SWAC by law is required to be part of this process, and that makes sense because we get such great feedback. You're representative of our community, and then we can take those recommendations, improve our work, and then ultimately take that to our policymakers. So SWAC's going to play a vital role in reviewing the plan and also making recommendations that we'll take forward. We're going to go through just a couple slides just to kind of give you an idea of how the plan's going to look in this next phase. We typically do them every 5 years. Sometimes there's a little bit of a lag just because of timing, and of course COVID has set in as well. So our next plan really will be effective for 2022 through 2026, and that's going to be a 5-year horizon. We do have a 20-year horizon for funding and financing, just because if you're going to do bonds or things like that, there's a longer time frame there. So we've hired J.R. Miller and Associates. You're probably familiar with them. We're going to hear more about their work from Mike. Basically, we're in the third phase here. So phase one and phase two, which Mike has covered, is really just going deep on what kind of capital improvements we need in our facilities. Also looking at rate structures and ways we can mitigate traffic. And then phase three is going to be putting these pieces together into our plan so we actually have a work plan to move forward. So next slide, Amber. Thank you. And anytime questions come up, feel free to pop in. So just to give you a feel for the seat that you guys are in and the hats that you wear as SWAC members, we've got 3 transfer stations in our beautiful county. And we also have a material recovery facility at one of those transfer stations, the MRF. We're doing about 400,000 tons. I know that's a little bit higher, but we certainly have more people coming. Our tip fee is a little bit less than $100, but just for round figures here, we're talking about a $40 million business here just to be moving this garbage tonnage through our three transfer stations, which is a big dollar amount. And so considerable, oversight and importance really in the roles that you guys all play, and gals through our Solid Waste Advisory Commission. Also just to get a feel for Clark County, we are half the land size of Rhode Island and with 500,000 people, that's about half of the state's population in Rhode Island as well. So we're not small potatoes here. We're basically setting up a system here for the future to serve basically half of a state here in the great United States of America. And we know that our population continues to grow. Each person that moves to Clark County generates on average about 1,600 pounds per person. So more people, more garbage, more trips to the transfer station, really more issues as we continue to grow with a system that we built in the 1990s and then improved a little bit with Washougal in 2008. Okay, next slide. On the left side of your Solid Waste Advisory Commission committee agendas, we have guiding principles. And so we took some of those guiding principles and just reworked them to make them a little more clear. This is the draft that we came up with. This was also, I think, in the handouts that Amber sent out in advance. If folks have heartburn or better wordsmithing, we would love to hear this. Again, we're going to have time through this whole plan process, which is going to take probably 12 to 16 months from start to finish. But here's where we landed, really with maintaining a sustainable solid waste system, enhancing the benefits to the community, and protecting our natural environment. Again, this is pretty much what we had in the previous plan. We've just reorganized. And that's where we start. And the intent of the plan is to minimize our waste generation and deter that material from going to the landfill. Next slide. In our previous plans, we had a number of chapters. I think we have 19 chapters in the last plan. It was just a little unwieldy and harder to fashion. And then I'm hoping to actually entice some of you to join a subcommittee here in probably October, November, December to do a little more deep dive and review of content, especially from an understanding standpoint. So we are garbage geeking out on people. So we've kind of trimmed this down to six chapters, which actually I can almost memorize now. We're going to have our intro, which will include some previous chapters kind of on admin enforcement. Then we're going to hit really our education outreach through our waste reduction, reuse, and recycling programs. This will include that crop that you guys have mentioned, have talked about, the contamination reduction outreach program. So that will be all part of that. And then we really move into the meat of our system, kind of the operations chapter, garbage recycling and organics, and a lot of the information that's been worked on over the years here with J.R. Miller Associates and our solid waste team and yourselves will be incorporated here. We've got lots of great information. And then we've got our targeted material streams. So this is an area where we can really pull out and focus. The state has a 50% goal to reduce our food scraps from going into the landfill by 2030. So we'll be looking at food waste. Construction demolition has always been an issue. Probably pull that out. And then some of our special waste materials as well. Finally, we used to have a standalone requirement to do a hazardous waste plan and moderate risk waste. So that will be our chapter five, and Derek mentioned paint and some of those other things. We'll be talking about all of that in that chapter. And then finally, how do we make payments on all of this? And that's our funding and financing. And a lot of that deep dive work has also been done through some of the consultants and sub-consultants in our previous work. So we're really well poised to knock out a great plan forward. And let's go to the next slide. We do want to make sure that we capture all that information as well. So we'll have a number of appendices. Most of these will be just to formalize the process, make sure that we've had public participation. We have adoption resolutions that all of the cities will sign on to this plan. And then ultimately we'll take that to our Clark County Council and some other things about disposal sites in the county. So again, just more information to make sure and a good place for us to track and make sure that we've got everything covered. The plan really allows us to move forward with grant applications to Department of Ecology, so we don't want to shortchange anything. Okay, and our final slide here before the big ask to join the subcommittee for reviewing is we are hoping that this will also be an active work plan that we can take forward with actionable items. In the past, I think we had, Rich, you'd have to remind me, I think we had over 100 recommendations. It might have been as many as 180, and it was just a little unwieldy and harder to keep track of. So with six chapters, you know, maybe we have five or six recommendations. We're looking, you know, 30 to 40 recommendations. And we're really looking at using kind of the SMART model where we have specific, measurable, attainable goals and with targets and also assigned. So this is just an example that the consultant and I put together. It's actually one of the discussion items that we'll be looking into today. To expand operating hours, you know, we would have a date, we'd assign that. If there were any costs involved, we could account for that as well. So trying to use this plan more than a shelf document as an actual work plan. So I know that was a lot of information fast, but really what we're hoping to do is get together a team, probably 3 to 4 folks from SWAC, who'd be willing to meet probably no more than 8 times. We're looking maybe 6 times for each of the 6 chapters, really just to give us more of a read and review and feedback. That's our takeaway item. Kyle, I don't know how you would do that in an actionable item, but it doesn't have to happen tonight, but that's our request.
Okay. Thanks, Pete. Yeah, I'm not sure what the best way to proceed forward with that, if maybe we solicit after the meeting emails from people. I don't know. I'd be curious here, maybe Travis, what you think about saying, hey, email Pete and Travis or email whoever and say you're interested and we'll see what kind of response we get from there. And if we don't get a bunch of people, we can go out recruiting people. I don't know. What do you think, Travis?
Yeah. I'd love to check in and hear from folks. I know Pete's put a lot of time and a lot of work into this and, you know, what you saw is forgive the overused tip of the iceberg for what's going on and what's happening. So I guess I'm just kind of curious before, do people have thought? I guess we'd like to hear thoughts on Pete's proposal and what he's putting together from folks and see where what people would like to know more about or if we're ready to just kind of move forward. And, if we did need to get to soliciting or getting, volunteers, you know, we could do an open call now and get a list of folks that are interested, but still send something out so that Jason and Simone have the opportunity to participate. So I'm good with either, Kyle. I think maybe soliciting some emails afterwards makes a lot of sense, but checking in with folks now would probably be great around what Pete has proposed so that they understand what they're getting themselves into if they are interested in volunteering. So.
Yeah. One question I have, Pete, is like things, for example, like organic waste currently, or food scraps. Currently the city of Vancouver has that, would this solid waste plan, like, would that be the part where we determined, like, expanding out to the urban growth boundary? Is that something that would be in the plan?
That would definitely be a consideration, yes. I mean, we need to get more tons diverted. And so all of those ideas and recommendations would be laid out.
Got it. I'm just trying to kind of think of ideas of what sort of things would be in the plan so I kind of have a better understand. I've perused the old one. I can't say I've read it front to back, but just kind of things like, so this is where those types of long-term decisions would be made on how the next 5 years of our system will go, basically. This is kind of our guiding document for the next 5 years.
There are a multitude of purposes for the plan itself, but definitely one of the plans we're hoping, and Travis and I have talked about, is to walk away with a 5-year work plan. That's something that SWAC could check in with, could be pulled out occasionally, you know, how we do it on our list of things.
One other outcome that, Pete, I don't think you highlighted today that I'm really excited about, and also just real quick, I just wanted to point out that our SWAC chair has confessed that they haven't read our solid waste management plan front to back, so just want to make sure people heard that. I don't know if our co-chair is in the same position, but we'll see.
You'll never know.
I know management plan for dummies, because that would be insulting, but we're like a, what are we calling it, Pete? I can't remember the pocketbook version or
the pocket plan. Have you ever seen like the Constitution you get in the pocket?
Yeah. So sort of a pocket-sized version that would be an easily digestible, accessible, new to a new SWAC member, people that don't have time to read it front to back. Or interested members of the community, electeds, you know, something that's a little bit more. So all this information will also be, you know, put into some collector's editions of the solid waste management plan as well for our people to use. So I don't know what's going on with my camera. I apologize. I keep jumping on and off, and I also don't know how to get rid of that burning garbage can. So I apologize if it's distracting.
I assumed it was intentional.
Nope.
Well, you know, I don't know how you want to do it, Kyle, or what you want, but I'd be willing to help out. I'd be willing to be on this little committee.
Yeah, I was going to, I'm not volunteering for the committee, but I appreciate Tim doing that or others that step up and do that. I was just going to say that I've been involved in a number over the years of these plan updates, and I think this is a good approach to doing it. Sometimes it's been like, we'll wordsmith it at a SWAC meeting with everybody involved and engaged, and that can get really long and late at night. So I think this is really a smart way to do it. I think having the consultant on board to kind of help do some of that crafting, I think will help a lot. So I'm hoping that the subcommittee that kind of works on this can kind of add a lot of value, and then working with Pete's team and the consultant, come up with a good plan. So I'm really appreciative of the approach you're taking, Pete and Travis.
I have some relevant experience. I've worked on stormwater master plans and sanitary sewer master plans, but not solid waste.
Well, you use the solid waste system, so you have some experience there, which is important. So
there you go.
Kyle, if you don't mind me saying, I'd be willing to be on the committee too.
Perfect. Thank you, Joe. We've got two volunteers. And I think I would also like to be on it as well. So that's three, Pete. You're doing pretty good, I would say, so far. Rich, going back, I've never done this sort of thing before with the solid waste management plan. You kind of been on the SWAC for a while. So in years past, you guys would kind of do this all as the SWAC. Is that how it was done? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that staff did a lot of the heavy lifting on it in terms of writing it. Although we did have, I think, one time when the SWAC chair took and wrote a whole chapter on her own, I think. So there is that opportunity to go outside the box a little bit. But I think the consultant and staff does a lot of the work. And I'm not sure how they're planning to organize it, but it seems like it would be good to have the subcommittee get together as you start off and kind of say, hey, these are some things, looking at the existing plan, that we don't see that we would like to see. And then kind of like that's what staff and the consultant goes and works on, comes back and you say, yeah, that's what we like. At some point, I think it would be good to kind of keep all of us informed as it goes along. So I think that would be another good role for the subcommittee. So that we don't all have to read every word going into it, but that we have some assurance that, you know, the representatives are on top of that. And I think also an opportunity for us to feed like, hey, if we really think, if we all as a group think organics is an important thing to do, we can kind of share that with, maybe not in a meeting, but, you know, kind of behind the scenes offline with those subcommittee members and say, yeah, really advocate for that. Cause I think that's the way to do it. Or I really feel that food waste source prevention should be kind of what we focus on. So I think giving that direction up front, I think is a good role for SWAC. Staff and the consultant will probably be out there kind of looking at best technologies being done in other places and what those really innovative communities are doing, you know, on the West Coast or elsewhere, Europe or whatever. But we can come up with ideas from other places. And a lot of this subcommittee's role, I think, is to really figure out what's going to work for us here, given our constraints and our priorities and limitations.
All right. Thanks, Rich, for your input there. Appreciate it. Pete, do you have, so you got three members. Is that?
No, that's great.
And we still have two other members who are not here who we can reach. Maybe Amber, could you possibly send them an email sometime and say, hey, we're still soliciting members for the solid waste management plan update?
I will do so.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
I think you're missing an opportunity. We need to just send him an email and just said you were voted onto the committee.
There you go. Just volunteer him. I like it. All right. I think next on our agenda, moving on, if we're ready, is Mike with some talk about the I'm guessing central transfer and some traffic impacts and all that fun stuff going on out there. So, Mike, I will turn it over to you.
So first off, we've sent you the chapter 3 of the draft plan or the draft report. Hopefully you all got a chance to kind of take a quick look at it. There's a lot there. Just so you know, we are getting very close. I would say within a month, 6 weeks of having the entire draft phase one plan out to you. And that's a big document. So we're meeting on Tuesday with Jeremy to kind of talk about putting together a user-friendly executive summary. I think without all the chapters, a while back, it was 93 pages. And we just got the MRF chapter back to them, and I think the ownership is going to be in there. And so it's going to be significantly larger than that one. And we'll have to set up some kind of a, you know, it's not an FTP, but a site that you can grab it off of electronically and download it. So that's kind of the update there. And, yeah, we're ready to start talking about, you know, some operational changes. We've kind of touched on them before. And, you know, now that you've seen some of the facts out of chapter 3, I kind of want to go over a real high level presentation. And as we finish slides, if you want to ask questions, that's fine. Amber, do you want to bring that up for me? So this is kind of by the way, Pete, and I and Amber, all three worked on this because it's kind of a conglomeration of what we've received from JRMA. And so we've tried to kind of slim it down and give you the facts. And really, I want to say that so far we've really focused on the minimum fee. It's been something that we've been looking at in the planning process since the last plan. And it's, I think, one of the best tools to kind of implement a fair system of charging folks and get them to bring bigger loads less frequently. We don't know for a fact it'll keep them away, but that's kind of where we're going to start with this. And this is this first slide is what we analyze with a minimum tip fee, adding days of operations with Jugal and West Van. And kind of behind the scenes, as Derek mentioned, we're also looking at adding days of operations at the HHW facilities as well. And that isn't included in this presentation today because I'm still working on the impacts of paint care. We're trying to figure out what's in and what's out so we can kind of determine what the cost savings will be. And then the last one is bulky waste. Some of you are familiar with like the city's cleanup days in the city of Vancouver. Camas has had them. The county's done them. But there's some other options we want to talk about. And then the last one is universal curbside collection in the urban services area of the county, battleground in the center. We're not really looking at universal in the rural areas. It's just not feasible because of all the private drives and roads out there. And hopefully there'll be more folks that get on service when they automate out there or go to semi-automated with the types of collection they're going to go to. And then Yakult, Yakult's a very small place, and it's almost like a Yakult and Amboy are just kind of urban, small urban centers. They're not very dense at all. So it doesn't really make sense out there at all. But let's go ahead and go to the second slide. So one of the things we've been working on is this cost of service. And this is, you know, one of the first slides you're going to see on what it costs at a high level to kind of operate these facilities. And what this slide is about is the RT is the route trucks. Those are the commercial vehicles coming in, primarily waste connections vehicles. And then the self-haul, which can be a combination of commercial, customers with credit lines and cash customers. And they can come in a truck, a van, or a car. And they are the problem. They're the traffic jam ups at CTR. And we're not alone in dealing with this issue. And it's just industry wide, this has become a problem. So one of the things I want you to concentrate is you kind of go down and look at the differences between what it costs for operations and administrations for self-haul versus, you know, the commercial. And then when you get down to the bottom, and you're going to see the operating margin. And this is for earnings before interest, depreciation, and taxes. So there's a lot more that comes out after this. But you really get down and you start to see the difference of how people on service are subsidizing self-haulers. And it's under our current rate system, that is a problem. And if you scroll to the right a little bit, you can see that, we're making a whopping $5 margin at Central, which has the most customers or self-haul coming in. We're losing money at West Van. And Washougal is, it's just killing Washougal. It literally costs $11, we're losing money on every self-haul customer that comes in at West Van and Washougal. And that's because, once again, they're being subsidized by these route trucks. And it's a fairness issue. And that's one of the things that we came across as we were doing this was that I didn't realize myself that the subsidy was that great. So we want to move on to the next slide.
Mike, one question for you real quick, if you can go back.
Sure.
On that is, can you give me an idea of what kind of things? So I see obviously the price differences are in the operations and administration. What are the what are driving those costs? Like, what are some examples of the operations costs and why is it so much more?
Oh, that's
that, like the people, is that the employees working there?
Absolutely. We'll get into it a little more because we'll start to see how many transactions are route truck versus self-hauled, but it's really
Mike. I mean, I think the real driver is the fact that and you just said it. You know, this a lot of this is done by allocation. So you figure one route truck covers 1,000 homes, and one car covers one home. So when you're allocating costs, you know, the man hours required to push around or to help and service one home on one car versus 1,000 homes on one truck is the reason that it's so out of whack. And so it's just so much more efficient to handle everything in large quantities.
And you get way more tonnage from route trucks than you do from self-haul, right?
Yes. Yep. We do about 500 tons a day of self-haul, and then about 1,000 tons a day of route material.
If you don't mind me asking, I've got a question to ask as well. The tip fee, is there an agreement within the SWAC, rules, shall we say, that the tip fee has to be the same for route trucks and self-haul? Is there anything stopping us from just simply increasing the price for self-haul? Or is that considered unfair?
Well, this is what we're talking about, Joe. It's actually a contractual commissioner action to set the rates for council form of government now. So this is when we get to the end, we'll talk about how this would kind of flow. And while we're ready to make a staff recommendation, we're not prepared to, ask you guys for recommendations right now because we've still got a lot of work. So this is our first round of introductions of really what's going on and how self-haul impacts the system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
So there is, if you look in the actual text of the chapter 3, there's quite a bit of information what's brought in and by, self-haul versus the route trucks. So you can peruse through those tables. And that I'm kind of going to go back and forth with some of them to kind of indicate where those are at. But, Amber, do you want to go on to this next slide? So bottom one, the red line, that's those route trucks coming in. And you can see they're pretty darn stable. But look at that line of transactions. But those are trips, those self-haul trips. And that's what's coming into CTR. And you can see it is a huge number. And that all drives up the cost because we have more traffic control, more scale house transactions. That all drives up the cost of operations, as Derek was mentioning. So it's a pretty large number. We're not talking about a few cars here. We're talking thousands. So next slide, please. So let me get back to my PowerPoint on my computer so I can see where I'm at. So annual facility costs, we're focusing on CGR for the most part because that's our problem child. Cost about 4.3 to run the place. Incoming commercial vehicles are about 13% of the transactional trips. 87% or 176,000. Our self-haul or those small commercial guys who can be either cash or account customers. It's a huge differential. So we have about 200,000 transactions, and this was a couple of years ago. So those transaction numbers, as Derek mentioned, have only increased. And at that time, the actual transaction cost, so keep in mind, we charge them $10 at the door. That actual transaction cost is $21.60. So this is where we're starting to see this breakdown of that subsidy. That's how much these guys are costing, or individuals coming in with their 20-pound loads, and I kid you not, you'll see that coming up. That's what they cost to process. It's a large number. So if we want to go down to the next slide, please. So in this slide, we look at what the average transaction costs for 100 pounds, or the actual, you know, you drive across the scale, this is what it costs. We have a transaction fee, which Joe is in the contract. And then the disposal fee is that 97, 95 bucks a ton there. So they only pay about $5 for the disposal, for a total cost of about $14.79. You get down to the actual cost of this, and you've got that fixed cost from the prior slide, but plus, you know, in that disposal fee, you've really got additional county fees and the cost to operate the HHW facilities, county and city fees, so those admin fees. So really, that adds a couple more bucks right there to the actual cost, which is right around 24 bucks. I mean, it's really expensive to serve these individuals the way they're coming in now. And if you look at the note below, so under the current fee structure, that actual same difference with the first line above, or, you know, the transaction fee under current, but you add 200 pounds, that transaction, you know, it's 24.37, so about 25 bucks. And so they can get service, and this is in the urban service there, he pulled this, for 22 bucks a month. So really, you know, what they cost in one trip to come in, they could have service at their curb weekly for less. And this is a message that you just need to get out. Let's go ahead on down to that next slide, please. And here we go. So I want to point out to you on this slide, it's slightly different than what is in the chapter, which is figure 312. In that figure, you're going to see the amount of folks bringing in waste under 300 pounds is about 54%. We focused on cash customers here and to eliminate about the 7% of small contractors that have accounts. And that works out to about 47% of all transactions are bringing in 300 pounds or less. Really, if you get under 400, it's 60-something percent. So it's really upside down in what we're getting, you know, because if you look at most of the guys or the folks that are bringing in over 400 pounds, those are those small commercial contractors with their trailers. And, you know, that's the only thing that drives up the average weight per customer on self-haul. Otherwise, it's absolutely stunning how many people come in with 20 to 40 pounds of material. Just stunning when you look at the numbers. And it blows your mind that they do it. But it's cheap for them to do it.
And I think the average weight of a 32-gallon can is, you know, somewhere around 25 pounds or so, 25 to 30 pounds. So it's the equivalent of weekly garbage service at home. They're just going to the transfer station instead.
Yeah, it's scary. Derek ran some numbers for us, and I was just shocked, you know, because we ran cash transactions for a month just to see what they look like. And I just couldn't believe how many people were bringing in those small loads. When I ran or managed the Lewis County system, we had a $5 minimum there as well. And we would see a lot of it, you know, particularly out in the rural areas, the Mortons, folks would save up 10, 12 garbage cans at a time and bring them in on a flatbed trailer, and it just, you know, I understand, but, you know, at that time, cart service wasn't offered in the county. And it was pretty amazing to me how well accepted and how many more folks in the rural area got on service once that cart service was available to them out in the rural areas. So there's, you know, one area that could improve a little bit, but I keep in mind there's a lot of people that live down long private drives out there. So let's move on to the next slide, because this is sort of a comparison of us to other folks. And as you see, our garbage per ton rate is pretty darn competitive. We're in the low end. But what's happening is that, you know, we're so cheap with this transaction fee, no minimum fee, that people are taking advantage of that. And you go down to Portland in the metro facilities, you know, it's $32 to drive through the gate. There's no mercy down there. And you get 360 pounds based on that $32 down there. You go to King County, it's 25, 320 pounds based on 150 tons, you know. And there's my old alma mater down there, Lewis County. They after I left, they went up to 10 and at 200 pounds. And I set the $90 rate, back in 1998. Seriously, that's how long that rate's been there. And so, I mean, you can see the differences here. You know, a lot of it is how much they bring in and allow in. We've got a common denominator of why we're going to recommend what we recommend. And, but you can see this is a common tool that other counties, other municipalities are using to get these transactions, in at a, what I consider a fair cost to the customer and not allow the self-haul to subsidize the route trucks. I mean, you've got people that use the system, people that sort of abuse the system. And I'm not saying that folks out in the rural area that have no other choice or abuse the system, but there are folks that in Battleground especially, their participation rate in curbside services is significantly lower than what we actually see in the urban services area of the county. Derek, do you remember what our participation rate is up in the county for garbage service nowadays? You must have had to step away. If I recall correctly, it's around 87%. And it drops off.
Sorry to jump in on you, Mike. One question I had for you that kind of ties into this is, do we have any data or ideas on where these self-haul customers are coming from? Kind of moving towards the universal self-haul or the universal plan. It's like, if we end up implementing that, are we, at least in my, I live in the urban unincorporated Clark County, and almost all of my, speaking from my own personal, everyone has garbage collection. No one self-hauls in this area. So do we, if we implement a universal collection, are we really just implementing universal collection in areas that almost have it already? I don't know if that ties into this.
So we'll get down to that. Durant, you are correct. I would say we're targeting. Derek, you back now?
Yes, sorry. Did I miss something?
I had a question for you. It ties into the question Kyle has about your services area. If I recall correctly, about 87% of households are on service in the urban services area of Clark County. Does that sound about right?
I think that's about where it was last time we looked at it, yeah. And then you look at any of the universal service, like City Vancouver, Camas, Washougal, you know, there is a threshold of acceptability of customers that are either, you know, chronic bad payers, chronic squeaky wheels or whatever it is. And I think it's about 5%. So, I mean, even in mandatory service areas, you get to about 95%, and that's kind of the target number. But that's still a pretty big difference between 87 and 95.
So what Kyle was asking is, do we know where, have an idea where the problem areas are? And I think that I can say we did some zip code surveys, mm-hmm. but do you recall what your, household to service ratio is in Battleground?
I don't. I'd have to go back and look. Kim and I were doing some work on it at the time, and it was always just a challenge to get the the household counts and compare them to our service levels, and then do it by zip code and everything else. But we could certainly by next quarter, by next time we meet, we can go with some of that data.
So that's when we get to that. This is some of the data we still need to build for you guys. And there's some work here to kind of, because that is going to be a question that's asked by the councils. It's going to be asked by our county council. Those two questions right there. And I think from the county council standpoint, it's a good point to say, hey, you're really, this is about, reducing nuisances in the county, getting the last, you know, 8% on the service. And so when they do get annexed into the cities that have this service already, that is a seamless annexation for them, you know. And, it, you know, that's kind of what the point is going to be in the county, about reducing nuisances and creating a very, I'm trying to think of the word, homogeneous system. So any other questions before we move on? So go ahead and move on to this next slide. So this is where we kind of get down to where we're at with minimum fee. And basically the mantra is it's about 47% of the customers are paying less than the cost of service at the transfer station. And it's significantly less. Customers of regular collection services are subsidizing self-haul vehicles in a big way. We are recommending that staff is, this is a preliminary recommendation because we're going to build on this, but we eventually implement a minimum fee of $25 at 300 pounds per vehicle. So I want to make clear the other thing is Derek and I are starting to work on this as well. There will be additional revenue generated by the minimum fee. We're still trying to pin down what that's going to look like because we believe that there will be a reduction of what we're seeing today. And it's a big number for across the system. It's about $700 each $1,000. But that will, can be applied to these, you know, additional, services that benefit the public that we're going to start to talk about now.
Before you go on,
go ahead.
So two questions for you. So number one, assuming this gets passed, that means that my rate goes down?
We don't know that yet. that's going to be a question. See, that's kind of where when we got to this point and we found, you know, kind of the sweet spot of where we needed to be for this minimum fee and then ran the numbers. We knew that was going to be a question. Is that, you need to understand that this is not a rate increase to you at the curb. All right. It's an action that impacts only customers at the transfer facilities. Okay. So in other words, your UTC rate or your city rate is based on that $95 a ton. And the minimal amount of a transaction fee. When you spread the transaction fee across 10 tons, it's $2 a ton. So it's very minimal.
So I thought really, I saw a very slight shake of the head no from Derek. It was very hard to.
Well, you're hearing the same thing from me because.
Sorry, my screen's frozen. Did you say we're losing money?
No, it's because it really doesn't impact at the curb.
Right.
Well,
I think anyway, Mike has conceived as some sort of. Yeah, how do we put these funds to use so that there's not, you know, additional gain on the transfer station private entity, you know, so that we're reinvesting those funds back in the community in some way or in the infrastructure of the system, which I think is the appropriate way to handle the funds. So
my other quick question is, Mike, it says $25, 300 pounds or less. I believe on that previous slide, there were a lot of agencies that had a minimum weight that was over 300 pounds.
Yeah, if you go back to the prior slides, and let's go back up to, hold on. Go back up to slide 5. So if you look at this, you kind of can see the actual cost of service is somewhere between that $24.33 and under the current fee, structure with the transaction fee and weight would be $24.37. So that's where we're getting the 25 at a rounded number. So it's not something we just pulled out of our hat. It's a tie to the actual tonnage and, the transaction fee kind of included in there and the actual cost of the transaction. So that's where we're kind of getting that number. Really, it's still a bargain for them because if you look at, you know, the fixed cost plus the, you know, the gray highlighted stuff and with the asterisks here, the 2433, they're still going to be paying, you know, less than they would under the transaction fee model. So, you know, their weight in that model is only 100 pounds. So we're bringing them in with 300 pounds and it's still under the actual cost of the transaction. So that is kind of that fair rate zone where we're looking at $25. And that's how we got there.
Thank you, sir.
Do you have any other questions, comments before we move into the next two sections of additional days and bulky? Everybody good? Okay, let's move on down to slide 9. So, what you're going to read in the report is this. Change days and hours of operation. We can't do X plus Y equals Z or A squared plus B squared equals C squared and say there is a quantifiable reduction if we add days of operations or reduce hours and concentrate them. There's just no way to correlate that until you actually implement. But the idea here is this. We've got two facilities that are closed on peak days. And that happens to be a weekend day where people go out on Saturday, they clean up their yards. And on Sunday and Mondays, we have lines north and southbound out the gate and onto 503 every weekend. And it's absolutely crazy. You can go on. I highly recommend you start looking at the camera on CRC's website and you're going to start seeing what I mean. It's absolutely insane. We've got to start to take some kind of quantifiable action in not only, is there an opportunity to, you know, improve public benefit services here? But if you do read through the chapter, there's a possibility of moving 200 transactions a day by spreading them out. That's what we're hoping. So once again,
and my guy that, you know, Washougal's open on Wednesdays to the public, and we have an appreciable difference in certainly an increase in tonnage, but an appreciable difference in traffic at CTR on Wednesdays. It really helps level that out a little bit.
So I think what we've got is folks that are coming in from the east and west side of Vancouver that wouldn't go, you know, to Central if they could go to these facilities. And, you know, obviously we'd need to ramp up the education outreach effort to get them there, but there's an opportunity here. And will it add cost to it? It will. And right now, are we certain it's going to reduce traffic? No, but as Derek said, anecdotally, it makes just good common sense to have that service available to them, and it is a public benefit. So it's that adding those days of operations will provide additional opportunities for self-haul disposal at those two facilities during the peak weekend system usage. And that's what this is all about. And so when we get together next time, we'll talk a little bit more about what that's going to cost. And by then, you know, Derek's going to have a little better idea of what's in and what's out with paint care. And we'll start, you know, kind of showing what that'll cost. And as Derek had mentioned, the HHW is probably something we still need to negotiate. We're pretty well all in agreement that we need to open facilities additional days. But that's kind of where we're heading. and hopefully spreading these customers out a little bit and, you know, giving them more opportunities to go to the transfer stations at different days. And right now, like I said, that would have West Van open 7 days a week and four days a week at Shugel. We really haven't talked about Tuesdays and Thursdays at Shugel. So we don't really, there would be some considerations there as well if we needed to go additional days.
So does the $25 cover being open for additional days, or will that be on top of that number?
No, it'll cover it. As far as it should. And so I've got most of the numbers, and the HHW is actually pretty darn expensive to operate. So that's, you've already got staff in place, and because it's a weekend, it's sort of a minimal skeleton crews at the sites, because there's not much commercial coming in. So it's really all about managing traffic and at the facilities. You know, you don't have the volume there that you need as many operators. Derek, you got anything to add to that? So let's move on to the next one.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
You broke up, Kyle.
Well, I had a question for you, Mike. He was just saying.
Oh, Joe.
Ask you real quick. Hey, is this a good time to ask a comment or should say ask a question about, a possibility of doing something different? Or should I maybe just put an asterisk here and we can follow it up at the end?
Yeah, why don't you follow up at the end when we're getting, okay, just before we close out. Travis is going to have some closeout statements, and then we'll go from there.
Perfect. Thank you.
Because I'd like to try to get through these next two slides and try to get us out of here early if we can. So you're going to see an extensive discussion of bulky rates and options with bulky rates in the chapter 3, and I suggest you take a look at those. I do want to say that in the urban areas and where it's UTC and or in the rural areas, Waste Connections does offer that service already. And you'll see the rates, tables in the chapter. I need to caution you that, and Derek can explain this a little better, that those are UTC services. So they're UTC basis everything on cost of service plus disposal. So I don't know how well we can implement some of the recommendations for bulky waste at the curb in the UTC areas. Derek, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, like Mike said, it's cost of service, so you got to think of it as, they want to make sure that if you're getting a 32-gallon can, that's exactly what you're paying for. If you're throwing away a sofa, you're paying exactly for the sofa. So they don't like throwing in extra services to subsidize each other in some fashion. So you can't do some things you might be able to do in a contract with the city where the city may say, hey, I want to bump up 32-gallon garbage by 10 cents so I can pay for a free bulky collection for everybody all year long. You can't do that in the UTC. So that's why it's a per unit, per item, per everything, per. So they just don't do it that way. And I did check around with our rate person who handles all of our UTC districts for Waste Connections, and we have a lot of UTC districts, and they said that that's just not a service that's available or a system that's available in the UTC. They don't. That's just not the way they're run. So
that's problematic outside of the contracted areas. I'm not saying that we can't take a look at it further. And this is one of the areas that we will be kind of potentially reaching out to the UTC about, verifying what Derek is seeing and see if there's any way workarounds.
Yeah, I mean, it limits our creativity a little bit because you're passing through different regulated entities. And so garbage is heavily regulated by the UTC. So even if you were wanting to say, hey, we're going to allow for bulky item collection, by contract at the curb, it's gonna be a franchise infringement that would cause issues. You can't really bounce around as much as you could in a contract.
So I'm going down to the tables. I need to kind of direct you to, okay, where'd they go? And I'm looking at the actual chapter here, trying to get to those rays. Okay. So those rays are under table 3.3. You can see the rates for the various cities as well. And then if you go to table 3.3, let's skip it. I missed it. Where is it? 3.7, you kind of get into the next bullet point. So for the most part, when people bring in a bulk good like a couch and a chair or whatever, non-white good, non-freon bearing, those are just $10 plus the weight. So if you compare those to the UTC rates out in the county, you're going to see that the UTC rates out in the county, they have an hourly charge, and that goes to that cost of service. And that's $60 with a $30 minimum, isn't it? A half hour? $60 an hour, and it's a half hour minimum, plus the cost. So it's pretty spendy to have them come out into the, you know, hinterlands to pick up your couch, versus go to the transfer station and pay the weight.
But they didn't earn it.
That could be. So, I mean, you know, then you get into the more specialty items, which are in this table 3.7 on page 31. And, these have been, some of these have been CPI. But, you know, a freezer, is $20 at the transfer station. And then you get into the tires and, you know, you're talking, you know, a couple bucks, $2.55 for a tire. Add a rim and you start adding tires on rims, it gets really expensive. And so, if you look at the options down below, and the report talks about this, the county used to do bulky waste recycling days, HHW days, and it got more and more difficult for us to plan and staff those, find locations that were willing to do it. And so the bulky waste collection events are going to have to be really thought through, but that is, going back to that model, is somewhat of an option. I just don't know where, you know, how we would do that, under our current staffing and kind of our staff model. It just, like I said, it really became problematic. Now, under the other option here, add bulky waste to regular collection, that's a contractual negotiation piece that Waste Connections would have to go through with each city. The city of Vancouver allows, one collection per year or one set out of a bulky item per year. And then it goes down to the list that you see in the report. Is that correct, Julie, Rich?
I think it's, one appliance pickup.
Yeah. One free large appliance typically, like a washing machine, water heater. And just because of COVID, we've adjusted, instead of cleanup events, 5 no-cost bulky items of their choice. What are very common are barbecues, mattresses, couches, those things that don't fit in a 32-gallon cart.
So that's something on a regional basis we could start to talk to the other cities about. And I think that model works better within the cities than it would within the UTC zones. But once again, that is a negotiated item between Waste Connections and that particular city on how they want to do that. And there's going to still be a cost associated to go out and collect it at the curb. And I think we've got to get rid of one of our dog couches, and it's going to be $30 over here in Washington County, something like that. You know how it goes. It's a good couch, and then it becomes a dog couch, and then it has to go out the door. We're at that point. So.
Is there a college student couch space someplace below dog couch, though?
Not anymore. Okay. Anyway, so that's kind of where we're at with the bulky items. It is a correct assumption by JRMA and in our plan that this is part of the problem. That, you know, bulky items, you know, they don't weigh a bunch, and they usually create at least one trip to get them in there. So that's something that we've got to take an additional look at and try to figure out maybe some additional, as part of the planning process that Pete's going to take you through, maybe some additional recommendations on what we should move forward with. And right now, this is one of those things we're not ready to make any kind of recommendation. So the last item we're going to talk about is this idea of universal collection. Kyle kind of touched on it a little bit. And this last slide we've got before we go into any comments or questions. So right now we're really down to the cities of the center, Battleground, in the town of Yakult are the incorporated areas that do not have universal collection. We've made a couple runs at Battleground over the years. And politically, we got shot down. I'm hoping that with the rollout of the carts next year, we can maybe take another shot at it. And what we're going to try to do is, as Derek had mentioned before, is beef up our data on, you know, how many folks have service there and how many don't. And that may be a physical count of households as we do a rollout. We have to figure out how we're going to get that data. The center is so much smaller, I think, that they might be open to it with the rollout of the carts. They're generally a little more user-friendly on the system. Battleground is always interesting to deal with. And so it's, you know, anecdotally, when we did our zip code surveys, most of them were coming out of sort of that Battleground, Brush Prairie area up in there, fairly close to the transfers, you know, facility. And, but even then, like Derek said, that's, you know, making a trip for 25 gallon can just makes no sense. And that's why, you know, if they have to pay $25 to come in and it's $25 or $22 a month for the service, they're just as likely to get on service for, you know, it might be an economic incentive if Battleground here is, hey, this is what's coming, you know. And then when we start advertising that minimum fee, maybe that pushes them out. And that's kind of what this whole chapter was about, was looking at, you know, options that were economic or service-based that would help potentially alleviate traffic and spread the traffic out while, you know, actually improving services. And this, it's, you know, that's where this whole big picture of the plan kind of comes together, with Waste Connections rolling out this new services in the county and in these smaller cities. And with the hopes that that more convenient service will drive some folks to the curb type service, along with these, you know, economic disincentives, additional services spread out over, you know, to allow them more opportunities and get them on the curb and spread them out to all three facilities. So hopefully that is kind of the goal of this initial chapter and these, you know, particularly I think it's a package that we're trying to develop that helps, you know, alleviate this in the short term while we, you know, start really working on the capital. Because I don't want you to get
you know, in anybody's mind that we're turning on a dime here and we're going to, you know, expand the transfer facilities. That permitting process is very onerous. It took 7 years to permit and build the shooter. 9 total for me from the time I started. So, you know, we need to take some actions in the interim. And this is sort of where we're starting. So in leaving off, we said we're going to build on what we talked about today, bring you back some more information at the next meeting. And at that time, we're going to ask for your recommendations. And Joe, you had something you wanted to add.
Sorry, let me collect my thoughts here real quick. I was chatting with somebody here the other day, and it dawned on me that would it possibly help with the traffic situation, or especially at Central, to create a an appointment system. That's the word I was looking for, appointment system, where people would essentially, you know, I'm imagining online. The ticketing service, if you will, go in, choose an appointment. Can see them, you know, with this, minimum fee that you had mentioned. You know, do you have 300 or less? You can click, shoot, you can even probably collect payment right there. And, you know, it'll essentially you choose a time window and you, let's say a 15 minute window and you have that time to show up. It would, definitely, you know, do a couple of things. First of all, you could limit the amount of traffic you have per day. And when you say, you know, listen, we have our, I don't even know what it would be. Let's call it 200 vehicles a day. Those 200 vehicles are done. That's it. You're going to have to either wait till next week or something like that. Or, you know, I think you know where I'm going with that. Anyhow, just a thought that I had.
Yeah, I'm not qualified to answer that. That's sort of a Derek question.
I like how you punted on that, Mike. I think it's a great system, and I hear what you're saying. It's very modern, you know, because that's the way a lot of customer service systems work nowadays, where you have a lot of time you go to do your thing. I think COVID really pushed it that way as well. You know, the devil's advocate would say, you know, a lot of the customers that are coming into the transfer station to use that are not, I'm going to make an overgeneralization, but they're not particularly tech savvy necessarily. So that system may not be, a lot of flip phones in that group. Nothing about you, Mike.
I have a real phone now.
I could see that being like equity wise, that might be a problem, making it more of a challenge and a hindrance to people. So we'd have to figure out, how to work through that. But, I hear you. I mean, I think that's a great way to do it and a great way to structure it a little bit better. Alleviates those. You know what your queue is, what you can handle every hour. And it's just a matter of technology. But I think that the equity piece of that's going to be a bit of a challenge. Speaking for the county and the city, I think they're going to probably have issues with that.
What do you do with the people that show up anyway? How do you tell that, one person's scheduled and the other person isn't, especially when they're lined up on 503?
Right. No, I'm with you on that there, Tim. Just by the way, I won't waste your guys' time with it, but, a little behind the scenes, that's what we ran into with COVID and at my folks' place with Pumpkin Patch last year is we went to an online ticketing system.
Yeah. And
the honest to God's truth is, as much of a pain in the rear as it was, full disclosure, we'll never go back. I mean, that's just, it worked so well.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden we were able to limit how many people were coming, and it's a long story. But no, I'm with you. I know that there's other issues with it like that.
So what did you guys do? Like is there like an app that does that for you and makes it easy to do?
Yeah. The one we used last year, and by the way, just if you're interested, just go check it out. It was called TicketSpice.com.
Ooh.
Was the one we used, TicketSpice.com. And what was really cool is what we were able to do was, In fact, we even set it up so that we could have a large blast of people come in. Sorry, I feel like I'm wasting your guys' time now, but we open at 10 o'clock in the morning, and so it was 10 o'clock. I guess we do open at 10 o'clock. I forgot. Anyhow, we had like 500 people that could enter at 10 o'clock, and then it was, I can't even remember what it was, 200 people per half-hour block after that or something like that. So anyhow, yeah, and it really, it just made a nice trickle all day long. And like I said, a lot of
I gotta tell you, I'm not saying no.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think we can talk about it. We're likely eventually gonna have two scales in and two scales out, probably.
Right.
At Central. Yeah.
Right, right. And of course,
what I was gonna say is,
sorry, go ahead.
Adding like a fast pass sort of system, like I think a pass, which is basically the line if you have an appointment. And everyone else queues in line and waits if they don't have an appointment. So you implement something like that, and everyone's like, hey, they're going right in with an appointment, then eventually.
You're kind of breaking up.
You're breaking up.
Sorry.
Yep. No, I.
So we'll talk about that some more, Joe.
Okay,
great. Internally. Julie had a question, I think, or Julie had her hand raised.
Well, just to Joe's point, and maybe for Slack members' awareness, is we have been using what we call our Recollect mobile and web tool to basically make the feature more user-friendly so residents can actually request bulky pickup from Waste Connection's hauling side of things so they can get it at the curb. And it's just being rolled out region-wide, so give it a try for your home. Go to wcnorthwest.com. Or cityofvancouver.com/solidwaste. And that's a tool we'll work on promoting as we promote the option to conveniently request service, but maybe from the hauler instead of making you make that trip, right? So just throwing that out there is that we can continually take input, Jeff and others from Slack, on how to improve it, because it's still a newish tool. So give us your thoughts.
Yeah, no, that's great. Kyle, yes, you were breaking up there, but I was understanding everything you were saying there. And now, please understand, folks, I'm not trying, and Mike especially, I understand that, you know, you guys want to put in a second scale. I hate to say it, but one of the things I see is, I would say why. Now, I don't mean, you know, why a second scale. Of course, you guys are busy. You kind of need a second scale. But I would love to see us throw up a minimum weight, you know, not 1,000 pounds, but I think even beyond 300, let's call it 400 pounds, to the point where you could just look, you know, just estimate in the back of a person's pickup and just say less than 400 pounds, go, you know, and all of a sudden the scale is just a non-issue.
Well, we actually had a system like that, and watching the camera, I started talking to the supervisor about that. And one of the things you're going to see as we get into the assessments of these facilities is there are only X number of stalls at Central. And so we did that for a while, and then it got to be crazy because they couldn't get them through and out of the stalls fast enough.
Yeah, the pinch points just kind of move around the facility. The reality is we need another facility.
Yeah, got it.
More stalls.
Yeah.
Or more stalls. And that's kind of where we're actually, capital-wise, that's what we're looking at. And we'll start to get in that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you're going to need to set aside some time to kind of go through the larger report as well. You know, we don't know how long the summary is going to be because the report's so long. But anyway, I think we're at almost 7:50. Travis, do you have any closing statements for tonight?
No, just real quick, I just wanted to update some folks on what Mike had talked about. Joe, I just want to be very clear. You did not waste any of our time. I think this is really important to have folks that can show up and help us consider additional, you know, really do an alternatives analysis and give us some other things to think about. I think we're so caught up in it all the time, and we've been talking about these solutions that it's very helpful to have folks that can think a little bit differently. So thank you very much, Joe, for bringing that up. And it was also an interesting point is that I hadn't even really drawn the conclusion or put connected the two, that this is exactly what we did with the vaccine rollout. You know, people made appointments. There was a process in place. Granted, it wasn't the scale of waste, but there's examples of this. So thank you, Joe, for bringing that up and for the conversation. So, no, other than that, I just, you know, thank you all for, this information has been a long time coming. We dumped a lot on you today. A lot of it was around some questions that you had proposed. I think, we're all in agreement that it is really important to do what we can to meet capacity issues and address traffic issues, cost of service issues. And I wanted to update folks that we will be, you know, I will be meeting with Kath, our county manager, on August 19th, bringing some of this information to her. An important part of that is sharing what our stakeholder engagement has been so far. So I will make sure that she is updated. You know, our regional steering committee has provided input. SWAC has provided some input, and I'll be coming to her before we're able to meet again and get some recommendations from you. So I'll just be informing her that, we've engaged with you, that, there's support around addressing some of these issues, but that there's some more information needed before we can get the recommendations from SWAC. But hopefully by the time we meet next time, we will also have some input and feedback from the county manager and potentially council. So we can kind of blend your recommendations with their recommendations and continue this conversation. So just to give some folks what we're doing with this information, while you're reading it is moving it forward on some bigger levels, on some other levels as well. So that was it. Was there anything else you wanted me to touch on, Mike?
As you guys go through the report, the chapter three, if you see things that you have questions about or comments, send those in a Word document to Amber. We'll get those all together, and then we'll either, you know, if it's a substantial comment that needs to go in the report, we'll incorporate that into the report, or we'll respond to the question either via email or at the next meeting.
Quick question for you, Mike, on the handouts. So we have this chapter three that's titled Operational Efficiencies and Impacts of Traffic and Cellfall. And then we have this table of contents that lists all the chapters, but chapter three in the table of contents is garbage, recycling, and organics, infrastructure, and operations.
Well, that's the solid waste management plan.
So what's the other one?
This is the regional system study.
Oh, okay.
Thank
you.
Okay, so this is the big, we had all the recommendations in the prior plan. That's what we based the scope of work for the regional system study on. So that's what we've been drilling down into initially. This is the phase one report. Phase two is, okay, we have recommendations from phase one that everybody agrees we need to take forward. And then we're going to drill down into that further for both the plan and for moving negotiations forward.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. That wasn't clear. Hey, Travis, one thing real quick. I read an article in the New York Times about a new law in Oregon and a new law in Maine, where they're going to charge manufacturers for the packaging that they produce and the recycling. It'd be really interesting from my perspective to learn more about that and see how that stuff works and see what you guys think about it.
Yeah, there's actually I think you'd shared that article and I totally forgot to respond. There's actually a lot of extended producer responsibility legislation that's coming through the state around plastics packaging and around packaging. There were a couple of bills last year addressing that. And I think the state's in the midst of, as a result of that, in the midst of a study. State loves their studies. They don't like to pass things, but they love to do their studies. That's something that's on our radar to watch in the coming year. I don't know where it's at. I think ecology's I need to get a status check on that. But there is a lot of EPR, extended producer responsibility or product stewardship legislation in the works. And I think an example of that is just, you know, they're sort of piecemealing it. Maybe it's not the right term, but paint take back program or paint care is a program that's putting the onus of disposal and collection on the financial onus anyways, the psychological and management and administration is all on public and private sector collectors, the financial burden is intended to fall upon the producers. So paint, I think there's some other things around batteries. I'd have to look at the list, but
well, I mean, really, it's on the consumer because the consumer pays more right, the product, yeah. And then it flows to the producer and then back. So
yeah. So, and there you have Derek's opinion on extended producer responsibility.
I don't mind it. I just always want people to understand it's a consumer tax.
That's not supposed to be the intent. The intent is to try and produce manufacturers to reduce their footprint, not just keep their footprint the same and charge us more.
Agreed.
Yeah. There's some stuff we can keep track of, and hopefully, you know, things will be a little bit more organized this year. I know we had a lot of people that wanted to engage with some legislative topics, and if that's one that we decide we want to move forward on, there's the Washington State. I'll share the information, but there's a national committee or a statewide committee for extended producer responsibility. And I know our statewide group is looking at some stuff and we try to keep apprised. But once that moves, Amber, could you help me make a note to put that on the next agenda or whatever we've got for some EPR stuff? Cause that'll be a big topic this year, I think, legislatively. So
I'm sorry, just legislative topics in general or which one specifically?
If you could put EPR.
Okay.
Thank you. That's all I got. Tim, did you have the chapter called Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban? Did you get that document?
I can't believe how long it is. Who wrote that?
All right. Kyle, I think this is yours to adjourn. Yeah.
Okay. Before we adjourn, we had talked about real quick, maybe we do it via a straw poll or something, but meeting in person going forward.
Actually, we've got 5 minutes, so I'm gonna squeeze into that. So,
take your 5 minutes. Go.
All right. So what I am going to propose is that I know that the idea of meeting in person is exciting. However, we are still waiting. We being public health and county staff are still waiting on guidance and expectations around return to work. And with some of the Delta variant stuff, our return to office expectations are adapting. So I am going to propose that we just plan to conduct our next meeting virtually. I know, Joe, you had proposed in person, but I think our expectations as SWAC and facilitators of SWAC need to be in line with public health's expectations and the county's expectations of staff. So unless something drastically changes, but I would say since this has enabled, I think, people to be more present, what I'm going to recommend is the next one for sure is going to be virtual. But I am open to people's thoughts. I think this virtual world has allowed potentially some increased participation if people are able to attend when they've got a lot of other stuff going on. And I also know that people's family worlds are changing. I mean, Alan has been participating virtually via phone every winter, I think, for quite a while. So we know it can be successful. And I think Tim's a snowbird now, too. So it'd be really great to have our members able to participate when they're off in warmer climates, laughing at all of us working stiffs that are all still putting in our hours.
Just had a question. Is there money in the SWAC budget that if we do want to do in person, can we visit these guys in snowbird land so we're in the warm climate? I mean, maybe that's a reasonable request.
You know, I'm going to check with our prosecuting attorney on whether or not Waste Connections could sponsor a trip like that.
February meeting is in Tucson.
Okay. Let me know. We'll figure it out.
But I'm going to propose type of a hybrid system. Rich, sorry, what were you going to say?
I just said corporate jet, Derek.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. Fake news.
Yeah, and I'll remember how nice it was to have a job right until I get back on that corporate plane. So I don't know where people's strong opinions are. I feel like this has been a success, but I know that there's benefits of being in person as well, and I don't so next meeting virtual. After that, I just am curious if people feel passionate one way or the other. Around this has to be in person or we should all be virtual all the time or a hybrid model feels okay, for us to continue to do. So I don't know what people think. I'm going to kind of just, does anybody have any strong feelings one way or the other around what type of expectations we should have, for Slack members moving forward?
I personally think it should be a wait and see at this point. I mean, I think what we're going through right now is just going to take time, unfortunately. I think the reality of COVID is it's not done yet. And so I think to make a decision right now would probably not be in our best interest. I'd like to be back in person, but I just don't think that we're quite there yet.
I agree with Travis. I agree with both of you in terms of the November meeting. I think eventually it is, you gel better as a group if you're in person, right?
Mm-hmm. Especially if you've got new members coming on. I mean, I feel like I've gelled with most of you, but I think it'll be really good for new members to have some in-person experience if we ever get any applicants for those positions. Anybody else have any comments on?
Oh, I would just say I would agree that the hybrid model works, I think, pretty well, and we've used in the past, even when we've been meeting in person. Alan is called in frequently, and I think it allows members to participate who aren't able to be there, but being in person, the conversations just flow so much better, and the feedback and all that stuff. There's definitely benefits, but I would concur that a November meeting, maybe we just take it on a case-by-case sort of basis, you know. Next one's virtual, and in November we decide we can see what COVID's doing and what the county staffing plan is and all that stuff. And we just kind of go meeting before meeting and decide whether we're meeting in person or doing it all virtual.
All right. And Amber and I have purchased the Solid Waste program has purchased some tech to hopefully make hybrid models a little bit more productive. So we'll be playing around with that between now and then too. So. All right. Kyle, yours to adjourn. Thank you for that last couple minutes.
Yep. I don't think we have any public comment. It looks like everyone here is staff or SWAC members, so we can skip that, and I'll make the motion to adjourn, and we need a second. Alan. All right. Sounds good. Everybody, have a great night. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it, and some good, interesting conversations tonight. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks all. Have a great night.